We're just now getting into the meat and potatoes of the Keeneland Fall Meet. We're going to have an excellent weekend of racing as well on Friday, 10:15. There's a $200,000 guarantee in the pick four. And on Saturday, there was a $300,000 guarantee in the another pick four. Don't forget as well, we have the BCBC NHC contest takes place on Saturday, October 16th. Queen Elizabeth II Day, and is open to both in-person and remote participation. They also have the $400 Fall Challenge, which is Sunday, October 17th, and must be played in-person. Visit keeneland.com/racing/wagering for full details. Welcome to episode 117 of Redboard Rewind. My name is Spencer Luganbuehl, and today my special guest is someone who is going to come in off the bench. It is In the Money's very own, Matt Vegvolgi. Me and Matt go over three races from this past Saturday at Belmont Park. Those races were races 2, 7, and 8. And some angles that we talk about are how Spencer might have to rethink having one jock on his do not bet list who might become this year's most improved jock on the NYRA circuit. And also we talk about how Matt hit a very nice exacta in a grade 2. This is Redboard Rewind. It's the same old story. And now I'd like to welcome in my special guest for this week's Redboard Rewind. Coming in with the assist after a late scratch from another guest is Matt Vegvolgi, who actually ended up hitting the pick six this past Saturday at Belmont Park. Matt, how are you?
Doing well, Spencer. Happy to come off the bench, man. Always ready to talk some races.
Nice pick six hit, like we had just said. When it comes to hitting the pick six and all of your past hits in general, do you ever end up noticing a common theme with all of them, whether it's, you know, two singles or just knowing what wrong or what right favorite to avoid in?
No, I don't know. That's a good question. It's tough to say. I mean, you can look at it different ways. You can say, you know, as key singles or key horses. I just feel like putting the tickets together properly. I think that's always the thing. I think it comes down to constructing your tickets as well as you can, making sure you represent your opinions as best as you can. But I would say for me, if I have like a set of horses or a particular horse that I want to build around, I feel like that's where my biggest hits have come. But it's not really, I would say, a straightforward answer. I think it's just representing your ideas as best you possibly can when you put those tickets in.
I've always kind of told this, and me and Marshall Sterling, who I have a lot of conversation with us about, is for people who can't hit pick fours and pick fives and they just keep, you know, banging their head against the wall and keep playing those tickets, try doubles, try pick threes. And also, if you are going to play those pick four and pick five sequences and you have a solid 6-to-1 shot that, you know, you think is the second best horse in the races and obviously getting forgotten about on the board, put some win money on it to the point where it's like, if this horse wins and I miss the ticket, at least it pays for the ticket. And then everything else on it is just kind of extra.
Yeah, no, I agree. The longer the pick bets go out, the harder it is. And, you know, I tell people I've gone months without hitting a pick six, and then all of a sudden that hit will come. As long as you feel your process is good, you know, your proven long-term ROI is positive, which, you know, mine is. And that's why I continue to play pick fives and pick sixes. But sometimes it gets frustrating. And sometimes you feel like you can't pick a winner. Everyone goes through those ups and downs, but the best part about, especially the pick six, you know, when you do connect, it's usually pretty nice, especially at NYRA. I love the fact that they really bucked the trend and went back towards, you know, a better pick six out of the jackpot style. It's a dollar with a low takeout. It makes me, again, I'm excited to play the pick six again, where for so long I avoided it because I'm just not into the jackpot wagers.
And I think so too. Just overall, when we talk pick six, pick fives, you know, there's stats out there that for a pick three, mathematically, you're only supposed to hit 12.5 out of 100. It's a lot less for the pick five. I think it's like 3 out of 100. So for people who, like, you know, they play 30 and they're like, we keep missing. Well, you have 70 more chances to go where you could hit 3 of them, but they're already busted out of their bankroll because they're A, playing too high, And B, I say this in the nicest way possible, your handicapping is not good enough to hit five winners in a row.
Yeah, you can. And we've talked about it before about like win percentage. Win percentage doesn't mean anything, right? It's your long-term ROI. And that's why I'll give Nahr Betts a shout out. I think the ADW is fantastic in terms of how you can analyze your wagers with the ROI tracker. I think that's important. Every single month I go back through all of my wagers. I look to see if there's any trends, if there's anything that I you know, maybe haven't noticed. And then when you annualize it, you know, like for instance, I didn't really realize how good I was at Santa Anita over the last 2 years, right? And then I drill down even further. I look at what type of bets am I successful at? And it was kind of funny. It wasn't pick fives, it was pick threes and doubles. And so, you know, I think paying attention to that stuff makes you aware. And when you're aware, you start to look for those opportunities. And again, I think that's what leads to success. And for me on the Nahr tracks, you know, I have been doing well with pick sixes and pick fives. And that's kind of where I like to live.
I think one of the best trends I ever saw was last year when Christoph got such a hot start at Saratoga. I think one of my friends, 80% of his profit for the entire year was that 3 week mini cycle of just Christoph winning every race. It was unbelievable when he broke down his stats and he's like, hit this pick five, three Clements. It was just like that Clement pretty much made his entire year.
Yeah. You're right. And the funny thing you bring that up is that if you looked like I did an analysis before heading into, to Saratoga, I was having the worst Belmont meet you can possibly think of. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just awful. Like, I mean, my horses weren't even on the screen. That's how bad it was. And I wound up hitting a pick six on the second to last weekend. And if you went back and just looked at the numbers, you would think I had the most amazing Belmont spring you've ever seen. It was just one pick six completely changed that entire scenario. And I was significantly positive. So, you know, again, I think if you put yourself in the right positions and you feel like you've been successful and have a good process, you know, again, it's hard. You have to just continue to follow it. And, you know, taking a break every once in a while is not bad either, but, you know, again, keep firing away. And if you know you're successful long-term at it, it's tough to stick around, but when you do, you'll have a nice hit.
And I'll say this too, just for people who either use an iPad or just the straight old form, keep old cards and then, you know, dig down like, okay, I know I've handicapped at least, you know, and bet 20 maiden races. Okay. Am I positive, negative for that? Okay. Let me go back and look at the winners and see how many were, you know, whether they're in the spread or not for me, or how many I truly just didn't have on the spread at all. And then it's like, oh, look at that. I'm undervaluing Noda and he's hit for four maiden races. And then the next 20 rotation, all of a sudden you hit two or three more Nodas and now your profits are skyrocketing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, drill it down to types of races, different conditions. You know, when you start to notice those things, I think that's the biggest thing for me is that I started paying attention. And we start to pay attention to your handicapping. It's like your subconscious pops out when it's like, you know what? We've been doing well here. Maybe we want to stick around at this race and what I call zero in and build out, right? You find a race you like, you find a horse you like, and then you zoom out where you say, all right, it's in a pick five, or, you know, maybe I like the pick three sequence or the double. I like another horse. Maybe I can cold deck the double into. So, you know, again, that's how I handle it. I don't really go into a card saying I'm going to play the pick five or going to play the pick six. Like if I like horses that are in that sequence, then yeah, I'm going to look at the other races and build it. And that's, again, when you look at pick fives, usually it's obviously going to hit one of those pick fives, right? The early or the late. Mm-hmm. And then same thing with the pick six as well.
I think that's also the most frustrating part when I talk to newer people in the game. They go, oh, I'm playing the pick five tomorrow. It's like the PPs aren't even out. I go, I'm playing it. Okay. Well, I guess we'll do that. And then, you know, I'll study the card and maybe I'll play two or three doubles throughout the card, maybe a late pick three. They've busted all their cash in the early pick five. I cash on a Rosario mount that I really liked in the eighth in the, you know, or in the finale. And they go, oh, how'd you have these horses so late? You know, when we talked about the early pick five, I just studied the card a little bit more than you. And I think that people, like we talk about all the time, they want to turn $5 into $1,000. And I think in this game specifically, and, you know, even just going with sports betting as well, this game is a long-term grind that even when you read the books by Beyer and the 50,000 year at the races, his 50,000 that year was 6 days. It was 3 days at a speed bias at Timonium or Pimlico. And it was one big exacta hit at Gulfstream. And I forget the other two, but that was his big 50,000 day at the races. It was 6 days out of a possible, I think he gambled 175 days that year.
Yeah, you're right. And one of the things that you have to learn, and I think my investment background and what I do for a living is you've got to be able to tolerate volatility in bankroll, mm-hmm. having big ups and downs, being willing to play, seeing your bankroll drop and almost have that nervousness like you don't want to lose anymore. If you have the right strategy and you have a plan, it usually works out long term. And it's just, that's one of the tougher things to do. And something you mentioned before about, you know, yeah, I'm going to play the pick five today without looking at the card first. I think a challenge for me has been when there's carryovers in a pick five or mm-hmm. carryovers even in a pick six, like at, you know, at Saratoga or Belmont. You know, my inkling is, you know, that's a real positive expectation of having that dead money in the pool. But when there's pick fives at tracks that really don't play often, I got to show discipline and sometimes step away from those because it just doesn't make even though it's a low takeout or the dead money in the pool, it still doesn't play to my strengths, right? So I think that's been a hard thing for me, of feeling like I have to play some of these bets when there's a nice carryover. You know, I think that plays into someone that says, hey, I want to play the pick five without looking. You know, I think take a look at it, handicap it, draw the tickets out. And if you like it, you feel good about it, go for it. If not, it doesn't matter how much dead money's in the pool. If you don't feel confident, I mean, mm-hmm. you're just going to add to that dead money.
Let's move on to the first three races for today. Race number two from Belmont Park from this past Saturday, 1 1/16 miles on the turf. It was a maiden special weight on the widener. What'd you like in here, Matt?
It's a tough one. I mean, you've got some, you've got some good connections with first time starters here. I was pretty bland, to be honest with you. I thought, you know, looking at the six Gunboat and the 12 Vagaries, I like both of these horses for two very basic angles that I like to look at. You know, if you look at Gunboat, one of the angles I like for a first time starter is, you know, showing gate speed, getting out of the gate and having that, that speed and fade run line. You know, like I've said before, three things I like with a first time starter: can get to the gate, get in the gate, and get out of the gate. Right. This horse did that, right? Faded down the lane, finished fifth, beaten 3 1/4 lengths. So I like this horse coming back, with another try, has experience going long on the turf too. I think that's also a positive. And the same, I would say, of a similar idea, but a different angle for Vagaries the 12, Chad Brown runner was, I like horses that, first time starters that finish in the money, but also make up ground in the stretch, right? You know, so many different things can happen in the early part of the race where they start off a step slow and maybe not realize what's going on. And then at some point during the race, they really get engaged and start to fire in the lane. I love a first time starter like that. I'll automatically put that horse as at least a look to bet back. Now that first race maybe have melted down a little bit more. So I would put this horse below Gunboat, but I thought, you know, those two horses were logical. The other two that I played as well, the first time starters, the five Eileen Gray and the nine Shad Nation, Clamont runners. He's done so well with first time starters. Now these are routes much better on the turf, you know, significant ROI on sprinting first time out on the turf. But I felt his numbers are great. I feel like I've at prices I want to throw them in, and they turned out going off both double digits. So I played around with those two, but the top two that I looked at, the Logicals, Gunboat and the 12 Vagaries.
This was such a wide open race. I mean, when I looked through the card, even still, I circled six horses for Vagaries. This one I passed on. For Chad, I actually liked the first a little bit better. Closed into a fast pace. Was 11 lengths off. I don't want that. I get the 65 buyers right around there. Horse went off at sub 4-1. I just don't want red. Or first of all, Chad Brown horses closing into fast paces and still not getting there. So that one was a pass for me. I thought Spicer, Joel's been absolutely ice cold after how well he did at Kentucky Downs a month ago. And I think for this one, when I saw the price on the board at 10-1, I was like, okay, I have to include this one hopefully somewhere. At the end of it all, Gunboat makes sense with the fast pace, like we had said. And for me, I'd send it up on Christoph. Christoph has always done well for me in these types of races. Jose Lizcano, to me, is the best turf rider or underrated turf rider of the circuit. And, I mean, if there's a most improved jockey category ever, I mean, is it not Dylan Davis this year?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's why I would say I upgraded him a bit in this race. because of that. I just, yeah, I agree with you. I'm definitely, I look at, you know, a hot jockey a bit different. I think that's, there's a lot of psychology that goes along mm-hmm. with it. And just as an athlete, like we've talked before, just, you have that confidence, you see a spot, you take it, you're not thinking. And I think he's definitely in that mindset right now.
So for me, I ended up double dutching Eileen Gray, the 5, and the number 9, Shad Nation. And just go over your A's and B's again one more time.
Yeah, I like the top two. I liked with the 6 Gunboat and the 12. So two and the 12 Vagaries. And then underneath, I had the same two as you, Eileen Gray and the number 9, Shad Nation.
Let's see who can break their maiden right now.
Gunboat breaks right on top. Pegs AK Girl. Vagaries moves up on the outside. And then it's Shad Nation who's running in fourth right alongside. Hope Over Fear is in fifth. Spicer down at the hedge runs in sixth. And on the outside is Sweet Surprise in seventh. And then it's Robos who's running in eighth. Taking a bad step there towards the back of the pack was number 1, Belle Goss. In front of her, Eileen Gray and Hatari. And Belle Goss is next to last. And trailing the field is My Joy in 12th. The quarter in 24-1. And it is Gunboat who has the lead over Vagaries. It's Gunboat by 2. Vagaries runs in second. Shad Nation and Pegs AK Girl, they are right together 3rd and 4th. Hope Over Fear runs in 5th, followed by Spicer on the inside in 6th. And then Sweet Surprise in 7th, half mile up in 48 seconds. Gunboat is the one to catch, leads by 1.25 lengths. Vagaries still in 2nd, 2.5 lengths to Shad Nation, next in 3rd. And farther back, it is Hope Over Fear. And on the inside, Pegs AK Girl, then Spicer and Sweet Surprise and Robos and Hatari, and they're at the top of the stretch. It's Gunboat and Vagaries, and they remain 1-2 as they head for home. 3/4 in 1, 12-1. It is Gunboat holding on to the lead here. Gunboat is in front. Now Shad Nation moves into 2nd. Vagaries is back running in 3rd. It is still Gunboat. Here's Shad Nation on the outside coming up to challenge. Here's a first-time starter who's going to get the victory. It is Shad Nation wearing down Gunboat. Spicer finished 3rd.
And Shad Nation gets it done. The 9, 23-40, the winning mutual. Dylan Davis, another great ride. And in races wide open like this, when you don't like the favorite, I didn't like the outside horse. You did like a couple more of the chalkier horses. But when you play those Bs and you get good value like this, I mean, just I pass both in the back, I guess. Good picks by us.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's paying attention to those numbers and just liking these Clément first-time starters on the turf. I know it seems obvious, but, I mean, if you're giving me double digits on them, I'm going to play them. I tell you that Vagaries had the absolute perfect trip in this race and absolutely backed up. I thought this horse was going to go right by Gunboat in the lane. Never happened. Just backed up. That's going to be a downgrade for me moving forward. I just did not like that effort, but I thought it was a gutsy effort from Gunboat though. I mean, again, showed some fast fractions, but hung in there pretty tough in the end, but no, I can't fault the winner. Really real professional trip for the 9, Shad Nation, and certainly the deserving winner and a nice looking first time starter. And you're absolutely right. Dylan Davis doing his thing.
Well, let's talk Spicer and Vagaries again. Obviously Vagaries going off much, much shorter price. You get double digits on a Chad first time starter. I'm sure Joel being so cold as he is probably a little bit baked into that price going up, but this one outruns the favorite. And I think no matter what, every time Chad goes off at a high number, there's certain specific instances where I will not play, cause I feel like the board is right. This is one where if I was going to add another one, I would have put Spicer in just because I felt the board. I'm not letting Chad beat me at 10-1.
Yeah, no, I agree. But sometimes, I mean, it's in my experience, it's almost to be expected where I do look at the board a little bit with Chad Firsters in terms of how much money they're taking. You know, you look for improvement along the way with Chad. You know, there's a horse we'll talk about in a bit that I think fit that mold that, you know, again, I think this is a horse to watch, right? I thought that was a good race. Again, I'm going to downgrade the 12 Vagaries. I just thought it had a perfect trip sitting off the speed and just no punch in the stretch.
Let's move on to race number 7. It was the Grade 1 Joe Hirsch Turf Classic, 1.5 miles on the widener. What are we liking here, Matt?
This was a separation race for me in the pick six, because I was against Gufo and against Japan. And I felt these two horses were definitely going to suck up the equity. And I felt I was going to get inflated prices outside of horses that I liked. I concentrated on three horses. And I know you're probably saying, okay, seven horse field, you're looking at three horses. But given, again, in the pick six, knowing that I felt so many players would gravitate towards Gufo as a single, or even just using the set of Gufo in Japan, I felt that it was worth to really key up and use these three horses. I really like the one, Serve the King. And that was just what we just talked about with Chad, about how he improves horses along the way. You know, it sometimes takes a little bit longer than others, but I felt this horse has really improved the last three starts off that layoff, got the win against about the same, I would say, in terms of talent wise, and that stake at Saratoga at the end of August. I just felt this horse could be sitting on a nice race. I could sit the trip, and I felt, you know, probably would get some nice odds, which I wound up getting. That was a horse I really wanted to look at. Another horse that I wanted to definitely include was Cross Border. Again, lots of chances, but I felt like this horse should be in the mix. Could sit off the early speed. Definitely was against Channel Maker. I don't think this horse is just much of anything. I would say it's probably going to be finished soon, in my opinion. So I felt could sit right off that speed. And you know, the other horse that I really liked as well, that if the pace did get a little quick up front, would just be in a much better position versus Gufo, was the Four Rock Emperor. Getting first run on that pace actually has the best late pace figure on my figures. So, you know, I felt, listen, these three horses, I know I'm going to get a number. And I felt in the sequence, in the game theory side of things, I felt like the easy button was Gufo. But I felt, again, Gufo, if you look at, you know, since that layoff, every race this horse has run, I felt has gotten a perfect setup. It's gotten a quick pace, coming off the pace and running them down late. I just felt today was going to be very different. And so I like some prices around it. So I used the one, I used the four, and I used the five in the pick six.
I kind of actually end up loving these marathon races now, because for me, my handicapping is just very quick, because we just know these horses. For me, Gufo was the one I did not want. If Gufo wins, I'm just never going to have this type of horse, the deep closer like this. I did like Japan off the last race, even though he was also coming from back. I just felt like Ryan Moore just didn't get him out quick enough, and I think he wins that race if he gets him out a little bit better. God bless you for Rock Emperor, because this horse feels like Sadler's Joy to me, where he just always gets up, good buyer figure, never is going to get the W. For me, my top pick was Cross Border. Huge fan of Maker. I love Louis. And this horse just consistently runs that high to mid 90. We kind of know what he is. I think needed to take a step forward in this race, but I wasn't terrified of anything in this race, especially with all the money going on. The other two, you know, Gufo is going off at sub 2-1. Japan's right above 2-1. I wanted a horse like Cross Border, who all of a sudden goes off at 19-1. And we were just talking about, you know, watching the board, and after the race replay, we'll obviously talk more about it. But at 19-1, this horse was by far my top pick. For me in this race, the number five, Cross Border. For Matt, it is the one, Serve the King. For Rock Emperor and Cross Border as well. Let's see who gets this grade one victory right now.
And they're off. Channel Maker broke well and is going right out for the early lead. Serve the King is on the inside with Arklo. Japan far outside. Cross Border is there as they come under the wire for the first time, and it will be Channel Maker setting the pace, leading here by about a length. Arklo and Cross Border, their heads apart, second and third. Japan is in fourth. To his inside is Serve the King in fifth. Rock Emperor is sixth, and the early trailer will be Gufo in seventh as the field heads for the clubhouse turn. The opening quarter mile over the straightaway there in 24 2/5 seconds. So it is Channel Maker leading here by a length, with Arklo in pursuit in second. Cross Border, the New York bred long shot on the outside in third. Serve the King is down at the hedge, running in fourth. Japan is fifth at this point, 5 lengths from the lead. It's another 2.5 to Rock Emperor, and Gufo continues to trail. And now they've reached the back stretch. And the opening half mile was run in 49 2/5 seconds. The defending champion, Channel Maker, takes the field up the back stretch and now leads by two. Arklo running in second. Serve the King. And on the outside, Cross Border. Cross Border is third. Serve the King on the inside and fourth. Followed by Japan. And then Rock Emperor and Agufo, who is still at the back in seventh. They continue up the backstretch. It is Channel Maker by a half length. Now Channel Maker by a head as Arklow gets closer on the outside in second. A gap of two to Cross Border and Serve the King. They are heads apart third and fourth. Japan is in fifth. Now Gufo begins to pick it up on the extreme outside. It's right alongside of Japan. And down on the inside is Rock Emperor. They're going around the far turn. Here comes Arklow now to take a narrow lead. And here comes Gufo, who is making his move on the extreme outside. Gufo is going up to challenge for the lead. Gufo now puts a head in front of Arklow. And on the inside is Channel Maker, who's running in third, followed by Japan, Serve the King, Rock Emperor on the extreme outside. The field is in the stretch, and Gufo is drifting out there and tiring. And here's Rock Emperor now to pick up the pieces. Rock Emperor has taken over the lead in the stretch, and Rock Emperor is drawing away here. It's Rock Emperor about to post a big upset in the Grade 1 Joe Hirsch Turf Classic. Rock Emperor the winner. Serve the King was second, and Gufo faded to third.
And the number four, Rock Emperor, finally does get that Grade 1, 3320, 103 buyer. I was so wrong about Rock Emperor, and Cross Border finishes dead last in 19-1. I guess the board was telling me something there.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised on Cross Border being that high. To be honest, I was a little surprised, you know, with the one Serve the King, 14-1, and Rock Emperor 15-1. But it went kind of what I thought, you know, Gufo taking a lot of money. Again, Japan was 2-1 as well. So you start to have these inflated prices where I think also too on short fields, folks feel like it's easier to single a horse. You know, again, sometimes that causes some crazy pace scenarios with relatively shorter fields. So listen, I'll say this, my projection of the pace was flat out wrong. I mean, it just to kind of knock on myself there. And the big thing was, I feel like if Gufo ran his, if Gufo ran the race that, you know, this horse has been running of coming deep from off the pace, I think Gufo would have won this race. That early move, I felt, is what killed Gufo's chances and actually set up Rock Emperor to make that big run from last. So it was an oddly run race. It got very confusing and different, you know, once you hit the far turn, I'm sorry, once you hit the top of the stretch, I felt if Gufo ran races of the past, probably would have won, made an early move. And I thought it set it up for Rock Emperor to finally grind it out and get it done.
And not only that, we get a horse at 14-1 or 15-1 and you have Serve the King underneath. Did you play any exactas by chance?
I did. Okay. And this is not Monday Morning Quarterback. I saw two horses that I liked at 14-1 and 15-1. And I just said to myself, are you really going to let a Chad Brown exacta at double digits go to waste? And I said, absolutely not. So I don't box horses really much at all, but I boxed these two up and it was nice in a couple of ways. I really felt, based on how I looked at the race, that this could very well be a big separation for me in the pick six. And again, making that bet along the way and having some equity build within the sequence of playing that exacta, which was nice. You don't often get, I believe it was an $89 exacta, I think it was, for two Chads going along on the turf. I mean, you can't pass that up, especially if you like the horse. I like both those horses.
Two runners I wanted to talk about as well. Number two, Arklow and Channel Maker. It's so strange because Channel Maker obviously won those two races at Belmont Saratoga last year. Arklow's even, he won the Louisville even this year. I just kind of feel like these horses are just getting a little long in the tooth, and you know, maybe the pasture's waiting for them to you know, retire. Not that I don't like seeing horses retire. Obviously, we always talk about how the younger horses get retired so quickly, but I'm ready for horses like Serve the King as a 5-year-old to kind of jump in and step in and take these spots out. Not that those other two horses can't run, but I kind of always seem to cross them out pretty quickly now at this point.
Yeah, Arklow was a bit closer to the pace than I expected. And I think that's what softened Arklow up a bit. Listen, Arklow's a classy horse, you know, certainly has a lot of accomplishments. And the same to be said with Channel Maker. I really feel that Channel Maker, I don't think that style is just in the cards anymore, right? Of going out to the lead and just taking him gate to wire. And again, I wouldn't be surprised if you see Channel Maker retire. Personally, if that were me, I'd probably go in that direction. But you know, obviously I'm not owning a real classy horse like this. So, you know, again, that's why I was against Channel Maker. I just felt couldn't handle the distance, and especially with the talent in this race. But I think Channel Maker might be on the way out.
Let's move on to the last race of this podcast. Race number 8, State Bred N1X Allowance, 6 furlongs in the inner. This time, what are we liking this race, Matt?
I thought this was a tough race. I felt this was the toughest leg in the pick six. I wanted to spread a bit and use as many as I could, because I had a really, really strong opinion in the 10th race with Voodoo Zip with Rosario. So I still had some opportunity to use some horses here in this leg. And, you know, again, I felt like it was, you know, Sheriff Bianco's race to lose, in my opinion. Wasn't a big standout, but I thought, I thought this horse had a big shot. The 11 Nero, I thought had a big, big say in this race as well. I like that outside spot, sprinting. I felt could stalk and have a nice run late. And then all the horses that I like to, Phantom Smoke was also an include. I felt had a nice run first off a long layoff at Saratoga. I felt could sit kind of off that first fray of pace and make a nice run late. And the real fuzzy one that I threw in there as well was Mass Marauder. This horse has to step up and run the best race of this gelding's career, I felt. But I don't know. I felt like that race at Saratoga, again, it's a step below. There's no question about it. But I just liked the finish. I felt like if I left this horse out and gets up, I would never forgive myself. I felt the turf races, you know, looking back, I know I've bounced from dirt to turf. The turf races, I felt, you know, were competitive enough. And I knew I was going to get a monster price. So I threw in Mass Marauder as well. But the three that I really played were the 3 Phantom Smoke, the 8 Sheriff Bianco, and the 11 Nero.
I'm not going to, you know, crap on the parade for Mass Marauder, but just going, I've always hated when horses win on a certain surface and then they get claimed and everyone's like, I'm smarter than everyone else. I'll put him back on the opposite surface. And James Lawrence just over 22 dirt to turf, 4% in turf sprints, 4% in 77 races on the turf. This one just to me, and listen, Wayne Potts is, you know, one of the better, I think, claiming trainers in the game. Obviously there's, you know, stuff with his certain barn that we've heard. I don't want to get into specifics with it, but everyone knows. Just not for me in this one. I originally circled Sheriff Bianco, and then I saw Wesley Ward was the trainer. And for me, I just don't like playing Wesley this late in the year. I just feel, especially at short prices, I feel like he aims for Keeneland, those earlier races. This one obviously being a 3-year-old, he's not his 2-year-olds. I went right back to Nero on the outside. As long as Javier's in the irons for this one, and maybe I'm a little bit attached because I did end up hitting that 3-1 at the Saratoga race for the maiden win, has slowly, you know, first race 4x3.25 was fine against Phantom Smoke, and then really ran well last time out to lose again. Maybe this is the kind of level where he's just going to have to have a couple more tries at it. But I thought, why not this one with the 82 buyer? Fit really well against a horse that had only just broken its maiden, and more like it as well for Carl Broberg. I know this one had the fast pace last time and just couldn't get there, but claimer being claimed by Carl Broberg, we all know how Carl can be in the claiming game. I thought this one was interesting at a price. Also, Eric Cancel, maybe not as good as Dylan this year, but he's also, you know, he's 5% now, but he's actually had an okay year as well this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I felt like an upgrade to the horse you liked and I liked as well, Nero. It just, again, that outside post, and I felt like the pace could get a little quick up front. Sheriff Bianco might get caught up in that pace, so I felt could sit a nice trip. So I felt like those were the horses I can get out of, but I thought personally that I could make a case for just about any horse in this race. It was a very confusing race. A lot of different things can happen. And I was kind of, close my eyes and shoot and hopefully I hit. So that was my approach to this leg.
It's the 11 Nero for me. It's Nero, Mass Marauder, Phantom Smoke. Am I leaving any out there, Matt?
Sheriff. So my A's in this where I use Phantom Smoke, Sheriff Bianco and Nero. And then I again, couldn't forgive myself if I left it off. I use Mass Marauder as a lone B.
Let's see who wins this allowance right now.
And they're off. Number 9, Uncle George, had a steady shortly after the start, is at the back of the pack. Sam A down at the rail. Sheriff Bianco is in between horses. Brock Modanov's on the outside, three of them across, and just in behind is Phantom Smoke, who's running in fourth. Volkert moving up now from the rail in fifth. Then it's Our Troubadour, who's in sixth. Nuro on the extreme outside in seventh. Masked Marauder is next in eighth. And at the back of the pack, More Like It and Uncle George. The quarter in 22 and 3/5 seconds. It is Longshot Samé leading here by a head. Sheriff Bianco right alongside in second with Brock Modanov next in third. Then comes Phantom Smoke. And down at the rail is Volkert, followed by Nuro. And then Masked Marauder. They come off the turn and into the stretch. And here is Sheriff Bianco right alongside of Samé. And Sheriff Bianco. Then comes Nuro, Phantom Smoke, and Volkert as they come down for the 16th pole. Here comes Phantom Smoke. Here comes Nuro. Far outside, it is More Like It, and it is Phantom Smoke who will be the winner here. Phantom Smoke takes it. Three-way photo for second.
And Phantom Smoke, the number three, gets it done. 740, the winning mutual. 82, the winning buyer. Always kind of hurts when you see horses that have run the same number before not get to that winning number. Nero and Sheriff Bianco running second and third with 80s. Like we had said, it's going to be a tough race. Phantom Smoke ends up improving third time. Allowance level, second time state bred allowance level. And, you know, good job by Rosario as always.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's my feeling with, you know, a race, like I mentioned before, that with in the 10th with Voodoo Zip, it's just with these turf sprints, you have to respect Rosario at Belmont. I just think Joel, he's just got an incredible clock in his head, but specifically going 6 furlongs at Belmont. It's kind of like my idea of Rispoli out in Southern California going a mile at Santa Anita. It's the same idea where it's just, I feel like it's just timed perfectly. And listen, the good thing was heading into late in that race, I was live. I had my horses where they wanted to be. I had no idea who was going to finish out that race, but you know, I just feel like Rosario gets his nose on the line first in a lot of those situations. So it just, you know, again, I just feel, you know, he just has a great clock in his head when it comes to these 6 furlong sprints at Belmont.
I think it's always good too when you're live in a certain race, and you know the way the board played out, these were the top three choices. There was very little in between them, and you can kind of feel good because it's not only you; it's the 100,000 people also playing the game and wagering. It's like, okay, I can't be wrong about all three, or I can't be right about all three, but hopefully, you know, I'm somewhere in the middle there, and one of these guys can get it done.
Yeah, and it's just especially new what I was live. I knew I had to be right with a lone A single, but I liked what I had in the last race. So it was one of those Survive in Advance kind of legs. Actually, we talked about a couple of Survive in Advance legs for me that I felt I can get by in this leg, and the other one I felt I can build some equity. So, you know, it kind of, again, it goes to the idea of like you have to single or you can't play, you know, this many horses in a small field. I don't think any of that matters, right? When you take a step back and you look at the entire sequence, your opinions and how you think that plays out relative to the pool and what you think the public's going to bet, I think that's what determines what horses you use. So, you know, I was glad it worked out the way that it did, but yeah, it's nice to see. Yeah. One of the horses that I wanted to totally dismiss didn't show up as a favorite. Confusing race, but I think the logical horses were close on the wire at the end.
Last moment before we let you go, Mass Marauder, 74 buyer, obviously off the board, bottom half of the field. But I still think when you see a horse like this at 42-1, he can improve 10 buyer points, whether that's just obviously just the class level. But I mean, this horse ran last time, 64. It was in the dirt. Now it's on the turf. I think that we know that turf is probably the right surface for this one. And obviously probably maybe not good enough for the state bred allowance level. But if we can get him in a high level claimer in this, it'd also hit maybe, you know, 13-10-1, which is always a good price.
I agree. And that's my first thought. Get this horse some class relief. I thought ran okay. I mean, I felt like maybe got stopped a little bit in terms of making a run in the stretch, but not much. I mean, just kind of outclassed with this field, but you're right. I'm on both sides. I think turf has got to be the surface for this horse. And then I think getting some class relief, I think, you know, you can go on a run with this horse, right? If you run him in the right spots, I think this gelding can go on a nice run. But just, you know, again, keep this horse on the turf. I think this horse can improve.
It's always good when you can pinpoint the right surface and maybe the right class level for a horse. It's going to be 10+1. That is all the time we have for today. I want to thank my special guest, Matt Vagvolgi, for coming in off the bench like we had said. Matt, where can people find you on social media to talk all things horse racing?
So I am at BlinkersOn22 on Twitter. Love talking horses on quite a bit on the In the Money Network. So feel free to reach out and chat. And Spencer, always happy to come on your show. I absolutely love the show and going back through races. And I always think it's a very important part of what I do when it comes to horse racing. And always happy to join you.
We will talk again soon. Good luck this weekend.
All right, Spencer. Talk to you soon.
I want to thank all the wonderful listeners who listen to this show and all the rest of the shows on the In the Money Media Network. I also want to thank my special guest, Matt Vagvolgi, for subbing on at such short notice. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Pierre Thomas Formertail. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. And our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Spencer Luganbuehl, and we will see you next time.